Good morning and welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Glad you could join us. Efforts are underway at the state capitol to avoid a messy showdown between the Ventura administration and the Minnesota State Senate. Unless something happens in the next day or so, the Senate, for the first time in more than a generation, is expected to reject a gubernatorial cabinet appointee. Two Senate committees have already voted by wide margins to reject the governor's choice to head the new merged Commerce and Public Service departments. And right now, the full Senate is expected to follow suit on Thursday. Well, joining us today on our midday program is the man at the center of the controversy, Commerce Commissioner Steve Minn. And we also invite you to join our conversation. If you've got a question or a comment for Commissioner Minn, give us a call here. Our Twin City area number is 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. If you're calling from outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll free, and that number is 1-800-242-2828. Meanwhile, here with the latest from the Capitol on the controversy is Minnesota Public Radio's Laura McCollum.
Former Minneapolis City Council member Steve Minn is the first to admit he doesn't have the support he needs in the Senate right now to be confirmed as head of a merged Commerce and Public Service Department. But he's still actively lobbying senators, and he says the Ventura administration and Senate leaders are talking about a possible compromise.
Well, I think both sides are now looking for a way to avoid coming to thunderheads, but I think the ultimate decision does rest in the hands of the Senate. The administration is going to be comfortable with the Senate taking the vote if they decide to vote against me, and then the governor will react as only the governor can, I guess.
DFL Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe offered the governor somewhat of an olive branch to avoid a bruising battle on the Senate floor. Moe says Minn could agree to resign in a month or so to give the governor time to find another commissioner, and then the Senate wouldn't take up Minn's confirmation. Minn says that's not much of an out.
Well, that's sort of like, do I want to shoot myself with a gun or hang myself with a noose?
That's the kind of blunt talk and typical Minn fashion that rubs many legislators the wrong way. Some say he's too arrogant to work effectively with the legislature, and some say he acted unethically by asking two top utility executives to contact Senator Moe about the merger. Others are angry the Ventura administration didn't consult them before merging Commerce and Public Service. Minn's supporters say he's brilliant and the best choice to run the new merged agency.
He's so qualified, I think he's scary to some people.
Republican Representative Dennis Osment of Rosemount spearheaded a petition drive on Minn's behalf, collecting the signatures of 46 members of the House, asking the Senate to keep Minn on the job.
His intelligence and expertise and what he can bring to the table outweighs all the negatives.
Osment says the Senate should listen to the general public. He says citizens only care about getting the best person for the job, someone who understands the complicated world of telecommunications reform and other commerce policies. But the House doesn't get to vote on Minn, and the petition delivered last week doesn't carry much weight with Minn's critics. DFL Senator Steve Novak of New Brighton calls the petition a ploy to curry favor with the governor.
It has no impact whatsoever on the Minnesota Senate. The confirmation process is constitutional. It's unique to the Senate. If we had wanted their advice, we would have asked for it.
Novak predicts another overwhelming bipartisan vote against Minn on the Senate floor. The two committee votes were 18-1 and 11-4, and Novak says he and most senators want to vote on the matter this week. Minn says some senators are reconsidering their opposition to his confirmation after getting the House petition and another petition signed by about 40 of his employees. Governor Ventura wasn't available to comment on the situation, but as late as last week, he continued to give Minn his unwavering support.
He's one of the most thorough people I have ever had the opportunity to work with. When Steve Minn gets a project or gets an initiative, his briefings, his paperwork, everything that man does is as thorough as it can possibly get. And he has all my confidence.
Yeah. But Ventura's confidence doesn't appear to have swayed many senators. And unless the administration can change a lot of minds in a hurry, a key Ventura appointee could soon be out of a job. At the Capitol, I'm Laura McCollum, Minnesota Public Radio.
Once again, Commissioner Minn has joined us here in the studio today to talk about the controversy and to take your questions. So we invite you to give us a call, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000, outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Mr. Steve Mann, thanks for coming over today.
Well, thanks for having me.
I suppose in a nutshell, we should explain to folks what it is that this new agency actually oversees. The financial institutions and the and you oversee utility rates. That's kind of the nutshell of it.
Well, think of us as the state agency that does business regulation and consumer advocacy. We do financial services and banking, credit unions, insurance companies. We license real estate and insurance agents. A number of other licensing functions like notary publics. We are the public advocate on energy issues. We do the analytical work to review gas, electric, and telephone companies. We also are the public advocate on consumer issues generally. We want to make sure that constituents of the state have an opportunity when they have a problem with business that they have someone to complain to, and we provide that function.
In terms of what's at stake here, if your appointment is rejected, does that mean then the merger of these two agencies is off as well, or is that a separate issue?
Separate issue.
And does the average person have a stake in this? Excuse me, or is this just one of those spats that occur at the Capitol involving insiders that doesn't have much impact one way or the other?
You know, Gary, it's been very interesting. Most people don't know who their commerce commissioner is, and that's just fine with me. And I think most people shouldn't really worry about who their commerce commissioner is unless they're incompetent to serve. But most people in the state have a vested interest in someone who is competent to do the job, and this merger really helps do the job and helps us do it at lower cost, which is good for Minnesota business and consumers. And it's a complicated merger, and it requires some direction. We think we've done very good work. My team, my management team, and my employees have really worked hard for the last 6 months. And because we're touching on so many issues that do affect consumers at their pocketbook in every shape, banks, insurance, gas and electric, telephone, I mean, these are very important issues to every common person. They should be concerned that they have good leadership and that we don't let politics play with whether I'm competent to serve or not.
The watching this story unfold, the thing that that I keep wondering about is why haven't you stepped aside? And that is not to comment one way or the other on your qualifications, or but it just at a human level, I would think it would be very difficult to hear all these people say all these bad things about you.
If they were truthful, if there was any facts that could support them, if they were more than just innuendo and political maneuvering, and if there were any substance to it, then maybe I might consider that I was guilty of being incapable of serving. But this is, first and foremost, in the first committee, this was an attack on the governor, an attack on the merger that we didn't consult the legislature appropriately. When that didn't play well with the public, it became a personal attack on me and a character assassination. And although I am, like anybody else, not anxious to have that happen, I had 5.5 years in the Minneapolis City Council where I was one against 12 Democrats. I don't shrink from a fight if I think the fight is meritorious. I think it's important for public policymakers, if they feel strongly for me to be rejected, they should take that vote. And meanwhile, it gives us time to make the case as to what the good work has been and what my qualifications are. And I'm hopeful that it gives some policymakers pause for thought about what kind of precedent are they setting here. If the new standard and litmus test for being confirmed is you have to be a compliant and sweet person and you can't have a type A personality and can't be effective, what kind of people are you going to get from the private sector to go into public service?
Can you be effective, though, if you rub so many people the wrong way, people who you have to work with to make public policy? Isn't that part and parcel of being qualified for a job like this?
Sure, absolutely. But I think, you know, how many people have I offended? That's a con art. I mean, you know, let's be realistic here. You don't get 50 people in a petition from the House of Representatives if you can't work with people. I didn't have anything to do with that petition. Representative Osment and Representative Rhodes initiated that, and they didn't have any trouble getting signatures, from what I understand. And it's clear that Senator Novak has not found favor with me from the minute I walked on the scene. He didn't confirm me. He canceled my confirmation 3 times last year. Didn't like my having a strong advocacy role in electric deregulation and telecommunications deregulation. Felt somewhat territorial about my advancing the administration's viewpoint in areas that have always been identified as his territory. That's what this is about. And there are not more than two or three legislators who are in that camp. There are numbers of legislators who are in the take it out on the governor camp, and I'm hopeful that our efforts to assuage those aggravations have been effective. But this boils down to politics, and it's not about competency to serve, and I think that's the message that we need to keep hammering away at. You know, what are the incompetencies that people allege, and what are the specific allegations that I'm supposedly being accused of? Nobody will tell you what the specifics are.
When you say this is about politics, what do you mean?
This is about the way we went about the merger and the way the governor treated the legislature in his first year in office. And I think the legislature felt the governor was disrespectful to that body. The governor has adopted a considerably tempered tone since this fall. I think he's done a very strong job of trying to focus on policy. But there clearly was some friction between legislators and the governor about how each other interacted with each other. And I became the tool of the Senate taking their anger out on the governor. For instance, the comment made about my talking with utility executives. I talked with one utility executive and one insurance executive, and I asked them, since they had come to me privately and expressed pleasure with the efforts of the merger and how we were making things work, and I simply said to them, well, if you feel that way, would you convey that to Senator Moe, because there seems to be some concern about the merger. And that got twisted into some kind of ethical approach on my part seeking confirmation, when in fact Jim Howard, the CEO of NSP, has said publicly on record and in the newspaper he didn't talk about the confirmation. But, you know, if you say a lie enough, people begin to believe it. And that's what's happening here. I'm getting caught in the middle of this, and although it's not fair, I'm reminded of the line from the Godfather movie where, you know, this is the business we've chosen. You know, I mean, I'm in the political sphere, and, you know, I'm comfortable trying to, you know, fight the right fight.
Commissioner Steve Minn is with us, for now anyway. He is the State Commerce Commissioner. In fact, he's head of this new merged agency, the Public Service Department and the Commerce Department. On Thursday, if the schedule holds, the full Senate is expected to vote on the appointment of Steve Minn to hold the job of Commerce Commissioner, and at last count, it looked like the full Senate would reject the confirmation, and that would be the first time anything like that's happened at a cabinet level in as long as anyone can recall. Steve Minn has joined us today to talk about the situation, and if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Mike, go ahead, please. Mike, you're on the air.
Yes, I've only known of your qualifications, Mr. Minn, and I think some of those stuff you've done through public radio. I live in Richfield. I haven't, unfortunately, been able to be a benefactor when you're in the city council, but I'm a Democrat. There are hundreds of thousands of us out here that want you to serve. Could you just, in the next couple, 3 minutes, or Gary and you, go through four or five things that we can do as citizens who want responsible leaders? Any contacts we can make, any logistical things we can do to try to help you be able to serve us? Thanks very much. I'll take my answer off there.
Well, gee, that's a generous question. There have been a number of calls and letters to senators because the Senate does take this up Thursday morning. I guess time is of the essence, but phone calls to senators expressing concern about the process and focusing on qualifications rather than politics, I think, would be helpful. There have been a number of senators who have expressed to me privately that they're uncomfortable with the momentum from last week and glad to have it taken up this week rather than last week. So I think folks can affect this if they let them let their opinions be known to their representatives and other senators, not just their own. I think that is effective.
On the one hand, you say that some senators have expressed privately concern about the process and so on and so forth. Senator Novak was noting in Laura's story that some commissioners, some of your fellow commissioners, want you out, and they'd like to see you gone. What do you make of that?
I would compel any member of the governor's cabinet to do that public. I doubt that's a factual statement. In fact, quite the contrary. I know that 8 of my colleagues went to see Senator Moe last week of their own volition to make the case for my being retained in the Commerce Post. The governor has an incredibly solid team of 25 commissioners. I've known a number of governors, and this is the first cabinet where we really do work as a team. We work across silos, and a number of us work on teams on individual projects. I have the highest regard for everybody in the governor's cabinet, and I think it's an outright lie to say that there are people in the cabinet that want to see me gone. If so, then they should come forward. They're telling you one thing and, you know, somebody else another thing, if that's the case. And the governor and the team have been incredibly supportive of me.
Senator Novak lying about this?
Yeah, I would think that's a lie.
What's at the heart of the really sour relationship that you have with Senator Novak?
Well, as I indicated to you, and I've made several efforts to try to mitigate this. Senator Novak and I have met 3 times, and in fact, I've arranged 2 meetings with him and the governor. And his problem is not just with me. He has a real anger with the governor. And every time I have a meeting, we walk away thinking, you know, gee, this was a pleasant conversation, and then nothing gets improved. I've tried to extend the hand. What I think drives Senator Novak is he's uncomfortable with having someone who's forceful from the administration's perspective on policy issues, which have been always his. Telecommunications and electric restructuring have been in his committee. And I have to tell you, before my appointment, I had never met Senator Novak, but all I knew of Senator Novak was he was the type of senator you'd kind of want on your issue, you know, someone who does his homework, and who takes hard votes on tough issues. The Prairie Island Bill, arguably the most difficult piece of legislation of the 90s, was his effort. So I had every reason to want to work with Senator Novak, but I just guess there isn't enough room on these issues for 2 strong personalities. And sure, I've made some mistakes in my communications with him, but it doesn't rise to the level of not being able to serve.
In terms of the merger itself, I know some members of the Senate have been critical of you for the way that whole procedure was handled. Some suggested that you went back on commitments that you had made to consult with them about any merger plans and so on.
Right.
Should that merger have been implemented without some consultation or without at least some public discussion? Because it seems like kind of a big public policy issue.
In retrospect, had we to do it all over again, we'd do it differently. I've said that now twice in committee. But it doesn't rise to the level of untrustworthiness. You know, let's go back and look at how this happened. There was a bill introduced the very first day I arrived on the job to eliminate the Department of Public Service. It had no companion in the House, so it wasn't going to pass. But I went to the senators who had offered the bill. Senator Novak was one of them. Senator Kelly was the other, and there are a few Republicans as well. And I asked if they would pull the bill back, because it made it very difficult for me to recruit talented people from the private sector with that kind of an elimination bill hanging over people's heads. They agreed to do that. I made a commitment to work with those legislators on any merger of the Public Utilities Commission and the Department of Public Service, and there was some discussion with the Attorney General as well. And that was done in earnest, and I intended to keep that commitment. And we were on that course of working with the Public Utilities Commission and my department about eliminating duplication when Commissioner David Jennings resigned in the middle of July. And at that point, the governor made an initiative of his own in which he said, I want to merge 2 departments. I want to send a signal that reducing the cabinet is acceptable in this administration. And we had a vacancy in the Commerce Post. And, you know, I'm on the governor's team. And the governor gave me a direction to make the merger happen. And do I wish we went and interviewed and briefed legislators about this? Absolutely. I've said that in committee. But it doesn't make the viability of the merger any less good public policy than what it is. And we've certainly learned, I think, a valuable lesson about how to go forward in the future.
Mm-hmm. Does the governor express similar regret about the way he handled that?
He has. And so has his staff. And you have to remember, I'm on the governor's team. I work for the governor. The governor felt this was more a part of executive privilege. Other governors have used the reorganization powers. Governor Carlson most recently created the Department of Children, Family, and Learning by cobbling several divisions from other agencies into one department. He didn't perceive it as an insult to the legislature. We were insensitive to the legislators in that regard. And just like the governor empowers me to speak on his behalf, as he does all commissioners, I have to sit there and take the jacket when we mess up. And I apologized in front of both committees and said, we made a mistake here. No question about it. But does that rise to the level of inability to serve? Because, you know, I can go through a list here of things that we've accomplished in 5 or 6 short months with the merger, which translate into real policy benefit for the state, cost savings to industry, and improvements for consumers. It would have been probably easier on us had we involved the legislature. It doesn't make the merger less viable.
Jim, your question, please.
I just wanted to congratulate Commissioner Mim on fighting the good fight. The arrogance that was apparent in Senator Novak's comments in his interview regarding a petition from the the other side of the legislature was really embarrassing to me as a citizen. And I'm going to call my senator, Kenrick Scavel, and ask him for his support. And if he isn't supporting it, ask him why. So keep up the good fight.
Thank you.
What happens, you know, we started this half hour with the with talk about some kind of a possible third way being found, some kind of a compromise. You say you're not going to resign. The Senate presumably would otherwise be voting on Thursday. What possible third options are there?
Well, the Senate always has the opportunity not to take this up for a vote. And, you know, that's something we'd... It wouldn't be the first time that's happened. Rod Sando served as the Commissioner of Natural Resources for 8 years without ever being confirmed. I would be happy to serve as Commissioner, admonished for the failures of communication on the merger, and hopefully energized to perform even better than I have been with a reprieve from the Senate to go forth and prove the merit of my administration of the department. And they won't have to take the vote up at all this year.
Can you work with these senators, though? I mean, many of whom have, some of whom have called you a liar, many of whom have called you unethical. They can't trust you. Can you work with those people?
Well, this is political rhetoric. One senator, Bill Belanger, called me a liar. I went and talked with him yesterday, sort of courage under fire to visit with someone who attacks your character. And I reminded him of some of the things that he and I did together when I was in the Minneapolis Council, and when Minneapolis and Bloomington were trying to resolve highway issues and airport issues and city-suburban cooperation, and I was leading the charge and try to bring back some memory to him as to what kind of work we have done over the last 7 years that we've known each other. Yes, the answer to your question, Gary, is if folks are willing to put the sabers down and talk about policy, they'll find a very willing commissioner to prove my mettle and prove my worth. I think the issues about ethics, as I said, are a canard. If I have an ethical problem because I talked to two industry executives who I regulate and asked them to comment about the value of the merger, then every representative and every senator who accepts a contribution from a lobbyist for utilities or an executive who works for a utility has the same ethical dilemma. And I don't think those folks want their books open up to that kind of scrutiny.
Commerce Commissioner Steve Mynn is our guest this hour. And if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Joining us now is State Senator Steve Novak, a DFLer from New Brighton, chair of the Senate Jobs, Energy, and Community Development Committee, one of the committees that overwhelmingly rejected Steve Mynn's appointment. Senator Novak is one of the commissioner's most outspoken critics. Good morning, Senator. I know you don't have a lot of time. You're right in the middle of a hearing, but I appreciate you taking a couple of minutes to join us.
Good morning to you, Gary.
If Steve Mynn weren't Steve Mynn, would he be qualified to serve as head of the Commerce Department?
Well,
setting aside the personal part about this?
Steve Mynn is Steve Mynn, and the Senate voted 18-1, one committee and 11-4 on the other, to not support his nomination for a whole variety of reasons, which have been which I think have played out significantly in the news media.
So it's not, in your mind, a matter of personality, or is it?
Well, his personal style certainly hasn't helped, apparently, based on the comments of a variety of senators, but there's a whole number of other issues that have been involved that have not been helpful to his cause.
Was merging these two departments a good idea in and of itself, forgetting again about how the merger was announced, carried out? Was it a good idea?
The policy itself, I believe, is a bad idea, and I think that's shared by a number of people. The process that was employed was basically non-existent, and some of the personnel and other issues that followed also were very negative. So it really didn't pass muster on any level, and of course it was preceded by the fact that we had commitments from him and the administration that were broken.
There has been some talk of perhaps putting off a vote on Thursday, not voting at all. Would you be in favor of that?
Well, that would not be my position, but it's really not up to me. It's up to the Senate Majority Leader.
Why would you oppose that?
Well, because I think that this issue has been totally heard in public committee hearings on two separate occasions. I think that the Senate, through its committee process, has been speaking to the issue. And I think that most people, not only in the Senate, but in the Ventura administration itself, and the public as a whole, would like to have the issue resolved.
You had mentioned in Laura McCollum's story that some commissioners, fellow commissioners of Mr. Minn, have indicated they'd like to see him rejected. Is that true?
That's true.
Would you care to mention who they are?
No, I wouldn't.
Now, Mr. Minn, earlier in the program, I know you didn't hear this, but he said that's simply not true and said you were lying about it.
He's incorrect.
Okay. Is there any way out of this impasse other than rejection that you can see?
No. I believe that will be the final result.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
State Senator Steve Novak, who is the chair of the Senate Jobs, Energy, and Community Development Committee. Commissioner Minn, obviously Senator Novak has drawn a line in the sand here.
What's new with that? Bottom line here is innuendo, unsubstantiated facts. Even, you know, he won't name who is supposedly which senators have concern. You know, the senators that have concern, you know, I'd like in the name, you know, who has concern about some specifics, specific issues. You know, I get the vote, but Senator Novak bargained, arm twisted, did whatever he could to get those votes as a chair, powerful chair of a powerful committee.
But the vote was pretty overwhelming, and it was bipartisan.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been suggestions, for example, that Senator Moe, as Senate Majority Leader, has somehow been orchestrating this. But, gosh, it's a bipartisan deal.
Well, it certainly has the flavor of the Senate being angry at a candidate. But, again, we come back at the facts. What are the specifics that they're angry with? And I don't think there are numbers of senators who are anxious to take this vote on the floor. I think there's a real desire to be past this issue. It's not perceived well in the public as being good process at all. I'll tell you, in response to Senator Novak's challenge that there are colleagues or even concerns within the Ventura administration ranks about my support, I'm sure we can generate a statement from the governor's office today and unanimity amongst the cabinet, if that's of any concern to Senator Novak.
It is true. You would agree, though, that if some commissioners did have a problem with this, I mean, they would rather express their concerns off the record rather than...
Well, as I said, it's just not likely to have happened. I mean, we're working on such a solid team, and here, and again, I'll repeat, you know, a number of my colleagues of their own initiative went to see Senator Moe and expressed concern for how this would disrupt a number of the governor's policies. You know, 25 of us have been working very closely on a number of issues. I'm in the middle of a couple of key parts of the governor's big plan. My agency is the point agency on electric restructuring, telecommunications restructuring, financial services restructuring. That involves health issues, HMO regulation as well. I have a lot of interaction with a lot of people, and I just think to a T, folks have been phenomenally supportive. That's what's helping me and my family and my employees get through this, is that everybody feels that the process has been unfair. It has been about politics, not about policy. And I think it's very clear that both my hardworking, dedicated employees and the public in general don't feel that this is the Senate at its best, and are looking for ways for them to extract, and we in the administration are looking for ways to extract.
Now, I know I asked you this earlier, but I just want to clarify again. When you talk about politics, are you saying that the legislators just are trying to stick it to the governor? Is that what kind of the bottom line here?
Gary, I didn't even get a chance to present my credentials or anything that I've done with the agency in the first committee hearing chaired by Senator Novak. I mean, that whole hearing was about the disrespect by the governor shown to the Senate. It was about the merger. Now, in front of Senator Solon's committee in Commerce, the second hearing, at least they had a chance to present the credentials in an eight-page document of accomplishments in 6 or 7 short months under merger, I think picked up a number of votes. And I jokingly told my employees, you know, that second hearing was a huge success. I doubled my votes from 2 to 4. You know, at that pace, you know, 4 weeks from now, I might get confirmed. But the reality is, you know, we'd like to get the facts out and the other side of the innuendo out so that folks who are voting understand what they're voting on.
John, your question, please.
I just wanted to ask Commissioner Minnie. He's referring to being part of a team, and does he not work for the governor's administration? Isn't the administration working for the people of Minnesota? I mean, it seems to me when you use the word team that you're kind of starting to, you know, being confrontational. You know, teams are supposed to win or lose and things, and it doesn't seem too cooperative. I'll hang up and listen.
Well, that's an excellent question. I don't think of it in terms of competition, as terms of supporting each other. This administration was the first to break down cross-departmental silos. The telecom restructuring effort was a four-agency effort between planning, trade and economic development, the Department of Administration, and my department. The Health Commissioner's Policy Team meets every week, and that's Commissioner Malcolm's team, and the finance department, my department, the administration department is there. You know, wherever we can provide expertise and resources, we work in teams rather than one department carrying a particular issue. We have a lead agency and a support team behind it, and the idea behind it is to convey the message through all the policies that the governor's trying to implement. It's a very creative approach. It engenders a good working spirit, and you know, the win is for the people in the state. A loss is not being able to affect change or be able to, you know, move policy.
You are in charge of some very complex issues, things that kind of boggle the mind for the average person. Do you think the average legislator is capable of making good public policy in some of these areas, telecommunication, electric deregulation, and the rest?
Well, I wouldn't want to be a legislator, I'll tell you. It's an impossible task to become an expert in all the areas that a legislator has to address and has to vote on. So I think it's appropriate for them to become specialists in certain areas, and many of them are unquestioned experts in their fields. And I think that's appropriate because it's a shared process. You have 201 of them, and they have to divvy up the pie, and they find their niches. It's a little bit different in the executive branch, where with 25 departments, you expect commissioners to specialize in areas of portfolio. Mine is in business regulation, creating a business regulatory environment that's friendly to do business in. The more friendly it is, the more likely we will have competitors. The more competitors we have, the better the service options, the lower the prices. The other side of the coin is good regulation also requires good advocacy. And as a watchdog, we try to make sure that consumers aren't taken advantage of. Now, my areas of expertise are in management, motivating and recruiting good people, giving them the tools to do the job, delegating and holding people accountable. I'm very strategic and tactical in the way we manage the agency. Other people, like Commissioner Fisher in the Department of Administration, are good at expressing a large vision for the future of technology and services. Commissioner Wheelock in finance has a broad grasp of financial issues and lots of experience in that regard. Commissioner Stutters from the Pollution Control Agency is an acknowledged expert both in law, pollution cleanup, and administration. The list goes on. The governor has a very, very strong cabinet. And I think folks should be able to do work in the areas where they have expertise.
Don, your question, please.
Yes. You know, isn't it kind of being pretty friendly to the businesses you have regulatory oversight for, to have NSP trying to intercede on your behalf? I mean, that really doesn't look good. And you're enamored of the private sector corporations. Corporations are highly undemocratic, authoritarian, top-down, which seems to be the model you've established. And all these people out to get you, I'm wondering if you have a paranoid personality, because when you're on the city council, there's all these buggings up in the lights, all these other people out to get you. Do you think there's any truth to that?
Well, I didn't put the bug up there, and I kind of wish it hadn't been there in the first place. No question on the city council. I played a role, the minority leader. I caucused in a phone booth because it was just me and the other 12 were Democrats. But, you know, if you want to get a message out and you want to try to, you know, get an opposing point of view out, you have to use the media and you have to be articulate about expressing yourself. So I was no shrinking violet on the council, but I don't consider myself paranoid at all. The attacks that have been made are somewhat political and personal. They're not professional. They were made in public, so they require my response. You know, I would just as soon be a quiet, unassuming guy rather than on the front pages of the paper every day for a week. You know, the issues that that you raise with regard to you know, what is all this about, this is very clearly a legislative body and an executive branch clashing over what's the right process of the merger. It really had very little to do with me until questions about how the process was used to get to the merger didn't play well, and then they shifted gears. And once it got very personal, I took that personally. I mean, you know, once your integrity is challenged, you have two choices. You could sit there and say, you folks, you know, have questioned my integrity, it's not true, but I'm going to go home. Or I could rise to the challenge and say, that's not fair, that's not right, and respond.
What about this business, though, of the comments made by NSP's top executive on the merits of the merger?
Sure.
Which may have been innocent enough, but after all, you are in the business of regulating NSP, and it, if nothing else, looks bad, doesn't it?
Well, it clearly now has the perception, and I regret it, and I told the committee that, you know, given the fact that the proximity of the discussion of the merger and my confirmation were so close, I wish it hadn't happened that way. I talk to industry executives of the industries that we regulate every day, and I've got banks, insurance companies, gas, electric, telephone. They're in my office trying to make their pitch, just like they're up on the Hill making their pitch. Only the difference between me and when they pitch the legislature is they don't write checks to me. They don't give campaign contributions. Their lobbyists don't give me campaign contributions. I work in an administrative capacity as an administrator. And they have a right to come in and make a pitch to us. That doesn't mean we, you know, that I overrule professional staff in terms of their handling of these industries. My highly regarded, highly trained, highly educated professional staff gave NSP one hard time about the merger. We were protecting the public's interest. The Attorney General settled for $60 million of rate rebate over 4 years, which was offered up 4 years ago when NSP offered a merger with Wisconsin Public Service.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't accept that. We went further. We went a lot further when we negotiated up to an additional $60 million in rate freezes and rollbacks, and costs of the merger were not allowed to be passed on to ratepayers. So nobody gets a free ride. I let the professional staff do their work. But as the chief executive of the department, sure, I talk to other executives. But does that rise to the level of ethical question?
Well, it's not a question of whether you talk to them, but when they start contacting legislators, that gets to be a little dicey, doesn't it?
Well, as I said, the proximity of the merger discussion with my confirmation clearly was regrettable at this point. But, you know, I think the best defense is that Mr. Howard himself said, I didn't talk about the confirmation. It's no different than any executives going up and talking to legislators when they're passing bills. And if you think that industry people and consumer advocates don't express opinions about commissioner candidates or bills, then folks haven't been to the legislature. There is I think, a give and take expected about people expressing a point of view. And the perception issue, I think, was a fair comment to raise. I think I've answered it adequately. I think the comments that Mr. Howard has made, I think, respond, and it should be the final comment on it. And I think folks, if they, as I said before, if they want to raise that to an ethical question, then what is the ethical standard here about legislators acting on bills and sponsoring bills who have received campaign contributions?
Tim, your question, please.
Thank you. I actually have more of an observation and a comment. I had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Min when he was my council member. And what I discovered of him is he has a lot of common sense. And I don't know, this is maybe my observation, but it appears that a lot of legislators don't have much common sense, and that seems to be more the conflict. I got to watch Mr. Min go through and debate against the 12 other members that were Democrats, and his point that he was trying to address was not really us versus them, but what was best for the public. And I saw this case after case whenever he was up and trying to get the best situation for our district. He was always looking for the best interest of what was best for the public. And it does not appear that the legislator is looking at the big picture of, is this common sense? Is this good for the public? They're looking more at less, what is this doing to me, or how is this going to affect me directly? And if you look at the goals that Mr. Min is trying to do here, I think it makes a lot of common sense. And really the challenge is that the legislator doesn't have a lot of that.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Would you agree? A lot of legislators short on common sense?
Well, I have to tell you, there are a lot of legislators who have privately said to me, you know, this is a difficult vote. I don't want to be here. A couple of senators said, you know, I like the work that you've done, but I've made a commitment to Senator Novak, and I can't go against him. He's too powerful a chair. I'm in public service because I like it. It's a challenge, and I enjoy the work. I had a much bigger salary and much less working hours in the private sector before I got on the city council. And I've had a number of options to go back to the private sector. But my family and I make the contribution because I think it's important to have people do this kind of work. As a taxpayer, I want someone paying attention to the nuts and bolts of government. And I like the work. It's challenging. It's fun to get in there and make changes and take a look at it and see what you've been able to accomplish. And I just worry about the chilling effect this process about me is having on anybody else thinking about getting into government. We need people to do government service if we want to make changes.
Phil, quick comment before we wrap up here.
Okay. I'm noticing that very few senators are commenting about Min's skills or his intelligence. He's obviously skilled. He's capable of doing the job. You know, they're going after him on the character issues. And yet, just a few minutes ago, we see Senator Novak come on and claim that there are people that oppose Min's confirmation, but he won't say who they are. You know, mystery people. And, you know, these senators that are going after Min on the character issues, I think, are undermining their own character. I mean, it's ridiculous to say that there's somebody there and then to refuse to name them and to expect the public to believe. And, you know, it's just immature and unprofessional for a senator to conduct themselves in that way. And that's what they're claiming that Min is. You know, Min has apologized. He's made it clear that he'll never do it again. He's learned his lessons about how some of the early missteps occurred. And the senators are unwilling to accept that and move on in a mutually supportive manner that would, you know, benefit the state of Minnesota. We've got a highly qualified commissioner seated right now, and then we've got childish senators that are trying to derail him, not on the merits of his job skills, but on, you know, for whatever reasons. And I think Min might have hit on it just a minute ago when he says a lot of the senators are at a point now where they don't want to go up against Novak because it might, you know, endanger a relationship with him down the road. Okay. But that's not good public policy, and that's not the way I'd want to be represented if I lived in Novak's district.
All right. Fellow Reform Party member Phil Madsen, right?
Sounded like him.
So what happens to you if the Senate does go ahead and vote and reject the appointment? What do you do?
Well, under the law, I stop serving, and I guess I'll have to pursue options that I have. I have some private sector options, and the governor's asked me to stay in some other capacity, and I'll look at that. I'm really quite committed to the governor and his initiatives, and would like to be able to serve him in any capacity he thinks is appropriate. But I have to tell you, after this kind of experience, it might not be a bad idea to kind of, you know, give a pass on public service and let someone else do it. And that's one of the most unfortunate things about this whole experience, is it soured me a little bit about government.
Well, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.